So it became very clear very quickly that we needed an open system that could handle any image format. And we also needed a way to bring those images before the pathologist. And as opposed to just a whole slide imager that would scan a slide and show it on your computer, we needed a way to take those images and store them and manipulate them and bring them to not only my desk, but to everybody else's desk.
Welcome to the People of Pathology podcast. I'm Dennis Strang. On this podcast, we explore pathology, laboratory medicine, forensic science, and why we should embrace technology in these fields. One of the main benefits of digital pathology is its ability for easier collaboration. But to do this, you need an image management system with those capabilities. My guests today are Elizabeth Wingard and Dr. Dave Wilbur from Carista. Their digital pathology processing platform was created in part to make collaboration like this more efficient. It has a few other cool features that we'll get into as well. So let's find out more with Liz Wingard and Dr. Dave Wilbur. This is going to be an interesting conversation. I think myself, I'm going to learn a lot from this. So Liz, we're going to start with you, and I want to learn a little bit about your background because it's in technology. So talk about your background in technology, how you got interested in healthcare technology, and then we're going to get into how you got involved in pathology.
My background's in sales and business development, always with high technology firms. I handled global accounts for big companies and worldwide. But my husband has been in radiology for quite some time. And we used to talk about how radiology was going to expand into pathology, oh gosh, starting in the early 90s, just as radiology PACS was really picking up activity. And as we saw in the late 90s and early 2000, when Aperio and 3D Histech went into the market, that we realized it was coming quicker than not. So as we talked about what other areas, particularly pathology, was likely to go digital, we began talking about what we'd like to do for them. And radiology without DICOM is a very closed system. DICOM helped a lot, but we wanted to have an open system for pathology, for Carista. And we really started with that in mind, primarily. So that's how we got started.
You said that radiology without DICOM is a closed system. What do you mean by that?
Well, the formats of each device are specific to that device. So Siemens is different than Philips, and it's, you know, exceedingly hard for customers to deal with. DICOM, Dr. Sam Dwyer, who was really the father of DICOM, although there were a lot of people involved, was also the chair of our scientific advisory committee in the early days. And we had always intended for Carista to be an open system, having seen the problems of a non-open system.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, then, Dr. Wilbur, how about you? Let's talk about your background, kind of how you got into pathology. And then I want to get into how you started working with Liz and Carista.
Well, how I got into pathology is a long story. I actually started in medical school as a family practice doctor, and I did my first year of internship at the University of Iowa as a family physician. And it wasn't until I realized that the experiences I'd had in pathology during medical school, I was a year out student fellow in the Department of Pathology. So meaning I took a whole year of my medical school training in the pathology department, primarily for learning research techniques and working with my mentors was a so-called analytic cytologist. And once I was halfway through my family practice internship, I realized that really this wasn't what I wanted to do with my life. I really was more interested in the research side and the analytic side of medicine. And so I actually transferred into a pathology residency program where I continued work with that mentor. And that work actually did me very well in the process of my career, because one of the things that I became interested in was the study of analytic cytology. And I continued that when I moved to Mass General. Actually, I started at Mass General on September 11th, 2001. You may remember that day. It was the day that Twin Towers were attacked in New York City. That was my first day at work at Mass General. So we were on kind of emergency mode in the hospital, worried about further attacks, particularly in Boston. They had actually on that day evacuated the tall buildings in Boston with just that fear in mind that they were going to be the focus of attacks as well. But that aside, I started working with Carista shortly thereafter in 2005. Because of my interest in analytic cytology, I had been a part of the development of the first artificial intelligence machines in pathology, which were the automated cytology instruments, which are still in use today in most labs around the country. And we were in the process, we had just received a very large grant from the U.S. Army for the development of telepathology using those automated cytology systems. You may find that to be an unusual grant coming from the U.S. Army, and that's a story for another day, perhaps. But because of that, Bob Colvin, who was the chief of pathology, and Liz and her colleagues came to visit him to discuss the whole initiation of digital pathology for the hospital. He brought them to my office. I could remember a group of four people with Dr. Colvin coming into my office and saying, gee, what do you think about adding surgical pathology and whole slide imaging to your digital repertoire? And I said, well, that sounds good, because I think that's where the field is going. And really, that's how we started with Carista in 2005.
Okay, two things. And I want to talk about that kind of moment, because that sounds like kind of the origin story of Carista. But go back to analytic cytology, because this is something I haven't heard of before. What does that actually mean?
Well, analytic cytology really refers to, rather than just looking at cells and getting a gestalt of what that cell might tell us, it's actually the process of measuring the cell or measuring features in the cell. And so, for instance, you know, simple things like nuclear size or nuclear perimeters or radius or the structure of the chromatin can all be quantified. And once you digitize an image, you can essentially analyze the structure of that cell in a way that you really can't do with just your eye. And as I mentioned, my mentor was really the founder of that, Stanley Patton, who had come to Rochester as the chief of pathology and brought his whole analytic studies from Cleveland, where he had started at Case Western Reserve, and developed that as the main focus of the department at the University of Rochester. So anybody who was interested in cytology kind of got into that, but that extended itself into the first FDA trials. A machine, essentially. There were actually several that came to FDA within a year in the early 1990s that actually could, using these analytic techniques, identify which are the bad cells in a cytology preparation. And this was all done with cervical cytology. Out of that developed the machine that I worked with, which was originally called the AutoPAP, and eventually was bought by Becton Dickinson, is now called the Focal Point, which essentially pre-screens cytology slides, cervical cytology slides, and presents the areas of high probability of being abnormal to cytologists, and then subsequently to pathologists, that being a cytotechnologist-pathologist combination. And it was found that these could be just as reliable as pathologists, but certainly more efficient, because rather than screening an entire slide, you only had to look at the areas of high interest. And that's one of the things that I was particularly interested in transferring to whole slide imaging in the surgical pathology arena, essentially pre-screening slides so that you could find the hotspots or the areas of interest for the pathologist to subsequently review that not only should increase the accuracy, but also the efficiency of the pathologist's work.
Okay, I got it. That makes sense. All right, then Liz, let's go back to you. Now, Dr. Wilbur mentioned the four people came to his office in 2005, and that was kind of the beginning of Carista. Now, let's get your kind of perspective on that, because this is back when digital pathology was first starting to become popular.
We went to talk to Bob, and along the way, one of our founders was on staff at MGH, and you know, as he makes his way down the halls, he gets stopped and he introduces the team. So we ended up meeting quite a few people in pathology. And he said, well, we're going to go see Bob Colvin about what we're doing and what our plans are in digital. And they said, oh, you got to go talk to Dave Wilbur. Every one of them said, you got to talk to Dave Wilbur. You know, it was the Dave Wilbur pointing. So, and then we got to Bob's office and sure enough, it was, let me take you over to talk to Dave Wilbur. So it was of the department and the folks that we had talked to exactly where we ended up. And to be honest with you, Dave has been an integral part of Carista in terms of providing guidance and leadership and insights. We certainly weren't experts in pathology. We had a remarkable technical team and moved very well in those arenas. But pathology, we needed a coach. And Dave has been that remarkable coach for us and continues to be.
Okay, that's interesting. And I can, from the story that Dr. Wilbur told, that makes sense. At this time when digital pathology is becoming popular, but most people are talking about slide scanners. And you're talking about a digital pathology image management system, which was a little bit different at the time, I think. Can you talk about that? Like, I guess from both of you, like, why were you focusing more in that area?
Software was the area that we thought had the best opportunity for us to make some of the impact that we wanted to.
Okay.
So we're, in order to put together hardware, you're up against, you know, deep pocketed, very large hardware producers. And that just wasn't our background. And our background was really more in software in terms of being able to give pathologists the capabilities that they need to streamline their work, to ease some of the pressures. And so we focused on software from the very beginning. It was not a question. Where we looked at hardware is really to make sure that the slide format could be read by everyone. Intrinsically, natively in our software, the slide format could be read. And we did that.
I can just add to that. One of the reasons that hardware was not in the focus was because, you know, we had experience with slide scanners. I had one sitting in my office. Dr. Colvin had one in his laboratory. But they were different kinds. And they had different file formats. So if I wanted to look at Dr. Colvin's whole slide images on my computer, I needed a separate viewer from the one that I was using for my office. So it became very clear very quickly that we needed an open system that could handle any image format. And we also needed a way to bring those images before the pathologist. And as opposed to just a whole slide imager that would scan a slide and show it on your computer, we needed a way to take those images and store them and manipulate them and bring them to not only my desk, but to everybody else's desk. So in order to do that, we needed a management system to deal with not only the images, but also the workflows that were associated with those images.
Absolutely.
Okay, I see. Now, Dr. Wilbur, since digital pathology is becoming more widely used, how have you seen the practice of pathology evolve kind of in line with that?
Digital pathology is more of a method of the way to do things, but what we're doing is really the same. You know, previously you would look at a slide on a microscope. Now you look at the image of that slide on a viewer and make a diagnosis. What digital pathology has done is open up and make more efficient those workflows that we are traditionally doing. And it allows for lots of efficiencies to develop. For instance, we are now using artificial intelligence or augmented intelligence, whatever you want to call it, to do, say, those pre-screening functions that we talked about we were doing in cytology back in the 1990s. Now we're seeing those same pre-screening procedures being done with prostate biopsies so that pathologists get a whole slide image of a prostate biopsy pre-screened with areas of interest identified for them already. You know, one of the first things that I thought about when I was thinking about digital pathology, and I kind of say this tongue in cheek because I feel like I'm airing pathology's dirty little secret here, is that we spent half of our time looking for slides in the department that we couldn't find because somebody else had them on their desk, or they had been taken for a tumor board and we needed to review them, or they were out for quality assurance, or they were just lost behind somebody's desk. And one of the great things that I thought about immediately when we were talking about digital pathology, and in fact, one of the first things that I proposed we do with digital pathology at Mass General was to scan all of our immunohistochemistry slides so that as soon as they came off the staining machine, they were available for review in the pathologist's workstation. You would no longer have to go looking for them. You would not have to ask your colleagues whether they had them, go running down the hall, et cetera, et cetera. And that has been a great boon, not only for the immunohistochemistry, but also for the general routine H&E and special stain slides. So things like that, you can imagine if you were having to spend an hour a day looking for slides, which is not unreasonable. I probably spend at least that on a daily basis. With digital pathology, I don't have to do that anymore. So this is just an example of one of the improvements. Now extend that to COVID, for instance. Pathologists couldn't come to the hospital, but they still had to do their work. So now with image management systems that could take images, whole slide images, and transport them anywhere to anybody's desktop, they could do their work from home. And I was just in a laboratory in New Zealand last year where they were doing that. You may remember that COVID caused huge lockdowns and nobody could come to work in New Zealand. So they were all reading their slides from home. And when I visited them, they were all reading digitally in their offices now because they'd become so used to it. It was more efficient. They didn't have to worry about slides. They got their slides immediately. They weren't using pre-screening yet, but they certainly had intentions to do that. So I think it's progressing fairly rapidly at this. The penetration isn't quite as high as we would all like it to be, but it's a slow but sure process.
Yeah, definitely. And what you were saying about COVID, I mean, I hate to say there was a benefit from COVID, but really when you're talking about pathology, there kind of was, because it really pushed digital pathology forward. Yeah.
Yeah, it did. We had the same experience with Brigham and Women when Jeff Golden was the chair. He called and said, "Come see me. I really need to talk to you." And he said, "I don't want my docs in the hospital. I don't want them to get sick. So I really need you to get implemented so we can get this done, get the LIS connected." It was very, and that was a big success. And Dave's absolutely right. It created a much better environment. And the docs loved it.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about Carista. Now, you recently partnered with AGFA Healthcare. And I'm curious about this partnership and kind of what does it mean for Carista and how does it kind of strengthen your offerings?
Well, AGFA came to see us in 2013. Five executives from AGFA came to, a couple of them were from the U.S., but a couple were not. And they came in and wanted to talk to us about coordinating with radiology. And our impression at the time is, look, we're willing to do that, but it seems a bit early, but, you know, we're more than willing to do it. And they came several times from Europe over to spend time with us, full days, how you put together and what are you doing and so forth. And we created some early demos for them that were based on our platform. And they used those at HIMSS and RSMNA. And I think they realized it's a little early because there wasn't as much interest as they thought there would be. So, and then we got back together and at the end of 2021, beginning of 2022, and began the more serious conversations about actually setting up a vehicle through which we could collaborate more closely. And so the truth of it is in the 10 years between our first conversation and when we finally signed the contract last year in 23, the acceptance of a combination of radiology and pathology had moved really quite a distance. For one reason, one of the things that was causing some discomfort upstairs was that as each new department, and it's not just pathology that's looking at this, as what Dave calls all the other ologies and genomics and such, we're all looking at specific ways to combine images and data for the benefit of all the doctors that could be involved in special kinds of tests and such. And they got together and realized that if we're going to have a pathology group of software and those devices, and then genomics wants their own and so forth and so on, we're going to have little buckets of images all around the hospital. And frankly, that's kind of hard to manage. We just think you should put them all in the DICOM arena with radiology. In fact, we knew radiology relatively well because we've been up against it so many times. We can deal with DICOM, we can deal with VNAs, and it has become part of the process of integration that we're working on with AGFA right now, so that a radiologist or pathologist can pull up the images either of pathology or radiology. And we expect, Dave has predicted, that the radiology and pathology image was, particularly for some specialties, will in fact be combined. It hasn't quite gotten there yet, but it will be where you have a radiology image and an overlay of a pathology image and where it sits on the body and so forth. And there's a value to that for, say, bone soft tissue physicians. So, you know, it's moving forward, probably has been moving forward now for a while, but the time is certainly right. And more medical centers in the academic medical centers arena, the willingness and the insistence on combining DICOM with pathology so that they are looked at together, this is now a requirement, to be candid. So we're there.
I think the concept of quote unquote efficient IT is at play here, because if you can combine all of your IT resources for all of the ologies, radiology, cardiology, pathology, you create a more efficient organization and a cheaper organization because of it. And that is really the driving force behind enterprise imaging, I think.
And you add to that the sense that you have a better security. The DICOM system has been, for radiology, has been relatively free of cyber attacks. So there's a feeling of added safety by compressing all these areas into one larger framework so that you can handle all of them. And so that's what the market is moving to pretty aggressively.
That makes sense. I mean, there is quite a bit of overlap between radiology and pathology, at least as far as the images go. So it makes sense to use the same image format.
Yeah, well, that probably won't happen. But the sense of it is that DICOM is easily used by pathology.
Yeah.
That radiology started using quite a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And that's good news. And in pathology, there are big scanners, Promana, Zeiss, that export in a DICOM format. And we have written DICOM exports for various other customers of ours that are scanner providers that want to make sure that they have DICOM So it's easily done. The nice thing about DICOM is that it is something of a, acts a little bit like a folder. So within that DICOM folder, you have not only the image, but you can also bring data from the LIS and add that so that with the image you have, without needing to go figure out the LIS, you have the data you want, you need.
Okay, I see. This is the People of Pathology podcast with our guests, Elizabeth Wingard and Dr. Dave Wilbur. We'll be right back.
LabVine is an interactive online learning platform where laboratory professionals learn, develop, and discover by sharing knowledge and building on each other's experience. The platform provides global access to internationally accredited laboratory-specific courses and other resources developed by lab specialists, like us, for the laboratory industry. LabVine is free to sign up, and you can use the link in the show notes to get started.
If you think it would be nice to have a helpful reference about digital pathology, I have some great news for you. Dr. Alexander Zhurdov has written a book called Digital Pathology 101, All You Need to Know to Start and Continue Your Digital Pathology Journey. This book will help you, whether you're a complete novice or a digital pathology trailblazer. You can get a copy of it by following the link in the show notes. Now for the rest of my conversation with Dr. Dave Wilbur and Liz Wingard from Carista on the People of Pathology podcast.
I want to touch on a couple of the, regulatory milestones that Carista has hit recently. So there was the license from Health Canada, and then also the IVDR CE mark from the EU. Can you tell me about both of these and kind of what do they mean to Carista as a company?
Well, it means quite a lot. I mean, we have been U.S. Focus and didn't want to move to Europe until we, you know, were a little stronger. But putting those permissions, so to speak, to offer capabilities in Canada and Europe really open up new markets for us. And we are doing it in concert with AGFA. So the AGFA is the largest radiology provider in Canada. And we are working with them on plans to make joint calls, and we'll support them in the early going so that we can provide our expertise in pathology. That's new for them. And the same in Europe and the UK. And we're very excited about it.
I can imagine that's got to be, it's just sort of internally, that's got to be exciting for everyone at Carista. Now, let's talk about Carista's platform. So this is called Digital Pathology Processing Platform, or DP3, which I like that. I like that title. That's cool. So let's get into DP3. Can we give kind of an overview of what it is and what it does?
DP3 is essentially a central repository that where the images are all referenced. So if you need an image, you can search through a database of its patient center. So if you're looking for a patient's images, you can not only find a current case, but you can also find other cases that have been previously seen and are present in the system. So it's essentially a search engine like that. But once you find cases, either by searching or from a pathologist work list. So a pathologist is assigned cases on a daily basis, and those would show up in their work list in the DP3 system. You can open those cases and you will see essentially the same as you would see in your office in terms of workflow. It starts with what we call a virtual slide tray. On one side of the screen, you would see what looks like a slide tray with all the slides from that case are present. You click on them. You open them in a viewer, and then you can manipulate them. You can move them around. You can magnify them, same as you would do with a microscope. But in addition, you're also able to do electronic annotations. So if you want to circle something, if you want to circle something for a further analysis, you can circle it and then order up, say, for instance, an analytic test. If you wanted to do an immunohistochemistry for estrogen receptor, and we're interfaced with a number of companies that will do that directly out of the platform. You can circle that area. You can go from a pull-down menu and send it off to a vendor for an ER analysis. You can also save those annotations so that you can use them later on after the case is signed out. If you're coming back for, say, a tumor conference where you're going over the case with clinicians, in the old days, if you will, you would have to take those slides and view them on a microscope in the conference room. But now we can just go into the image management system, pull up those cases, and go one by one to all the annotations that you'd previously marked because you knew that case was going to tumor board. And you now have all the areas of interest that you want to show the clinicians. So these are the kind of workflows that you can do in DP3, essentially everything that you can do in with your microscope in your office. And essentially, there are some new workflows that are coming because of this image management system. For instance, we now have canned programs for quality assurance, quality control exercises. So if you're going to review, say, all the prostates that were done in the last month, you can do a search. You can pull them all into one file and send them to the pathologist that's going to do the quality assurance. So instead of having to have all those slides pulled and sent to review pathologists, you can send them a file of images. They can go right through those cases and generate a QA report that will be very nicely shown to your CAP inspector or your CLIA inspector when they come to do a review of your quality assurance systems. So as I mentioned, one of the things that DP3 has done that I think is really good is that we have developed connectivity to laboratory information systems and electronic medical records so that you can, at your request, can bidirectionally feed information from the LIS into DP3 and then out of DP3 into the LIS. So you want to, say, report a case, report your findings, and you put that in the report field of DP3, it can automatically go back into your LIS and be reported if you choose to report your cases out of the LIS. You can also, from the platform, request a teleconsultation from another colleague within your network, or you can send that out to a colleague specialist in some other city or at some other institution. And one of the unique features of DP3 is that you can do this synchronously. So you can look at the same case at the same time, share control, pass it back and forth to each other, and see each other's annotations all real time. Or you could do it asynchronously if you're in, say, a different time zone. So you send them an email with a link. They report back when they have an opportunity to do this. And that way, you can share those cases with other individuals. You can also export cases to education modules and research modules if you have projects that you're working on in those arenas. And the nice thing about DP3 is that it will anonymize those cases, those that are sent to either research or education, and that protects the PHI or the health information of that patient. And that's a relatively unique feature of the DP3 system as well. So you can create education projects and research projects that are protected along the needs of your institutional review boards. And you can control them and have workflows just like the clinical module. So that's kind of an overview, a quick overview of DP3. Did I leave anything out, Liz?
It, pretty well. We just, the collaboration, I remember being in Dave's office. Dave's office tended to be ground central for us. And Eric Wirch and I were over there at least once a week. I'd say Dave would tell me whether it was more or less than that. But I remember the day that we were working on something and Dave said, you know, we're going to add collaboration to this. And Eric was in the room behind me working on the server. And he said, okay. And before you know, we had shared images. Today, we have not only the shared images between different facilities, we also have shared images around the world with different countries. We internationalize it so that if you're in France and you're talking to Vietnam and their French is a little rusty, you can have both sides can be speaking in their own language, and that internationalization has been done. Or you can talk on the phone. The collaboration has voice as an element of it. So we've moved a long way from since those early days, but Dave's exactly right. And we have a lot of remarkable new things coming up.
One of those things that I'd just like to mention is any pathologist that's done a lot of work with reviewing whole slide images will know that the ergonomic interface devices that we use, i.e. a mouse, to manipulate the images is just not an ergonomic means of review. In fact, when we were doing the original Phillips preclinical trial at Mass General, we kind of opted out of doing more than 30 cases a day because our arms just got too tired manipulating those images. So we thought about ways to make this better. And one of the things that we did was we made a device that completely recapitulates the way you move a slide on a microscope stage. And we call this the virtual slide stage. And it's now with our first customer. We're getting really positive feedback that ranges. Everybody needs one of these to, boy, this is really good. We're glad we have it. So we're hopeful that this is a device that's going to really streamline the whole adoption of digital pathology. Unfortunately, it only works with DP3 right now, so you have to have DP3 to get it. But I've always said to the engineers, we need to universalize this because I think everybody's going to, this is a better way than using a standard mouse.
True.
Okay, I like that. That's an interesting idea. Yeah, looking at most of the image viewers in digital pathology, they don't move the way you would move a slide on a stage. I can see pathologists who don't want to give up their scope just yet. You might be able to convince them a little bit better with something like
this. I totally agree with that. I think especially the older pathologists have really liked this device. The younger pathologists, the ones that I see looking at pathology images on their iPads next to me on the airplane, are really, really don't necessarily need new user interface devices because they've been used to gaming for so long. But I think the recapitulation of the microscope stage is an important step forward.
Yeah, definitely. I like that. Okay. Is there anything else that you can tell me about, like what's kind of coming in the future for Carista?
Well, we generally wait till we actually have it, but we have an awful lot in the pipeline.
Okay.
You know, one thing pathologists are remarkably good at is telling you exactly what they feel like they have to have. And sometimes there are minor features and sometimes there are not so minor features. And you know, it's better for them and better for us if we take those seriously, in the sense that we don't turn those away at all. And they have been pretty aggressive about telling us what else they'd like to have. You know, there's this one thing I really need to have. And that's good because honestly, they get so excited about this when we've gone through the entire installation and they can get right into the LIS. They are so thrilled. It is fun to watch.
One of the things that I would just add is that we're doing a bunch of new installs now. We're predominantly installed at academic medical centers because these are the ones that are really going digital. And as those new installs are used, particularly by the trainees and by the researchers and by the educators, we're going to see a whole population of pathologists that have bedded in new technology. And I think that is going to drive adoption as these pathologists go out and say, hey, how come we don't have digital pathology at this place? We had it where I trained. And I think just as the digital is used more, it's going to be used more. So I think we're very excited, and that I would say is coming is that more installations are going to breed more adoption, and that's certainly what we're seeing. We're seeing more RFPs now come out from predominantly large institutions. And so we know that they have the wherewithal to, I think, as we go forward, we're going to see more and more adoption based on this slow growth in the larger institutions.
It also has opened up the ability to add capabilities. So for hospitals that perhaps, you know, have a limited expertise or have a very difficult case, to be able to log in and send a patient's file to one of our customers' expert centers and say, I need help on this, and get that answer back. Either let's talk about this, and they can look at an image together, expertise informing the generalists that this is what I see. That has been very, very interesting, and is a capability that a revenue generator, in a sense, for expert centers, but also needed support for the remote docs and remote smaller institutions.
Our friends from Google, who were doing some partnership work with, are saying that digital pathology is going to democratize pathology across the world. The reason for that is, as most people know, most of the pathologists in the world are in the United States. There are still healthcare needs in countries outside the U.S. that don't have a lot of pathologists. So bringing in cases from those, I think, is the one hope of those countries. And it's also the hope of the U.S. pathologists, because that's an increased revenue stream that can go to support these very expensive transformations to digital. That's probably the biggest obstacle at the moment, is the cost. It's hard to sometimes say what the return on investment is going to be in these. And efficiency and accuracy count for some of it, but that's often not enough to justify the high cost. So there has to be another way to do this. And revenue generation through consultations is one such way.
The cost justification for digital pathology has come a long way from the days of radiology. So radiologists cost justified because when they needed a film on a patient, the nurses that were sent to retrieve the film would count the steps from where they were to down to the basement to get the film, to bring it back up. And it was a step counting process. And so when we got together a year and some ago with AGFA, they said, okay, now tell us about cost justifying. How many steps? I said, well, we haven't seen the step process since radiology, because the improvements and simply the workflow and the streamlining and being able to move through cases a little more expeditiously and perhaps even more cases is what people do. Steps is gone by the dodo bird, but you kind of see the progress that's been made on streamlining and digitizing first PACS. And now, of course, steps is, you know, not a part of the equation at all. So progress.
I like it. That's great. I think that's probably a good place to end then. So this has been a very interesting conversation. And like I expected, I did learn some things. It was interesting to get to know the two of you better, get to know more about Carista and DP3. So Liz Wingard, Dr. Dave Wilbert, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. We enjoyed it.
Our pleasure.
If you're looking for another episode of the People of Pathology podcast to check out after this one, here's a clip from my interview with Dr. David Klimstra as we talk about the use of AI in determining HER2 status.
So there's a pretty easy, a direct line between the nature of the genomic alteration and the morphologic manifestation that results. AI enables us to potentially pull out things that pathologists may not have recognized yet, that are related to the underlying genetic alterations of cancer, but they're manifested in a change in tissue architecture or cellular structure. So to get back to HER2 expression, do we know why HER2 negative cases have a different histology than HER2 positive ones at a mechanistic level? Well, perhaps not, but the fact is they do. And AI was able to be trained to recognize those differences and predict which cases are truly negative.
You can hear more from Dr. David Klimstra in episode 163.
All right, great big thanks to Liz and Dr. Wilbur. Today, we explored the inception of Carista. They focused on the need for a system that could handle any image format and streamline the workflow for pathologists. This vision became a reality with DP3. With this system, pathologists can access and review cases remotely, collaborate in real time, and request teleconsultations. The conversation also touched on the regulatory milestones Carista achieved, including licenses from Health Canada and the IVDR CE mark from the EU. These milestones open up new markets for Carista. Liz discussed their partnership with AGFA Healthcare, aiming to integrate radiology and pathology images within a unified DICOM framework. This is an interesting idea, and I'm curious to see where this goes. Dr. Wilbur introduced us to the virtual slide stage. This is designed to mimic the movements of a microscope stage, potentially easing the transition for pathologists accustomed to a traditional microscope. Again, this is an exciting idea. Lastly, we talked about the future of digital pathology and the democratization of pathology across the world. With advancements in technology and the potential for revenue generation through consultations, the cost justification for digital pathology has evolved. This also leads to access to expert pathologists for patients in low-resource settings. This is a huge benefit to keep in mind. If you want to find out more about Carista and DP3, I'll have links in the show notes for that. If you want to find out more about this show, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at People of Path, or just connect with me on LinkedIn. Thank you for continuing to share the show with others. Together, let's inspire the next generation of pathologists and laboratory professionals. This show is a member of Health Podcast Network, which connects listeners with conversations and stories about health, care, and well-being. You could find a link in the show notes to Health Podcast Network. And while you're there, check out some of their other interesting podcasts. Thanks for listening. I'm Dennis Strank, and I'll talk to you next time on the People of Pathology podcast.